Welcome to Wherever You Are. It's Ryan McNeil in Toronto, Canada. You're listening to Wicked Little Town number 3 after a little bit of a delay in between part 2 and part 3. We're almost at the end of the Toronto International Film Festival. This is the third audio dispatch, the offshoot of my regular matinee cast dedicated to the goings-on at TIFF, the 38th annual Toronto International Film Festival happening still the rest of the weekend until the 14th. I am gathered here in Queen Street West with some people who've come a long way for this particular iteration of TIFF. I'm joined by one Andrew Buckle. Sign in, please, sir.
Hey, I'm Andy Buckle from Sydney.
Visiting and blending in as a local, apparently, because you guys are getting asked for directions.
Yes, just on the way here, we were asked where King Street was, and we pointed them in the right direction.
I'm also joined by one Samantha McCosh. Please sign in.
Hello, everyone. And Sam.
There's that. See, you know what? That was it. I remembered. I asked you about a year ago. I was like, does anybody call you Samantha? And you said, only people who want to get a very dirty look. So I was like, I want to see.
Did you get the look?
I got the look. I'm still getting the look. It's wonderful. It's okay. Everything I thought it would be. Welcome to you both. So we three gluttons for punishment began our Friday morning by watching The Cobbler, which is the new film by Tom McCarthy. He's the guy, it's almost strange to fathom. This is the same cat who gave us The Station Agent and Win-Win and The Visitor. And he's given us this movie about a cobbler starring Adam Sandler, who has a magical stitcher, which I know for certain. I did not read that far down in the description. I just saw he had a new movie and Adam Sandler was in it and he was the guy who fixed his shoes. I thought it was going to be more in line with Win-Win or The Visitor or something like that. I didn't realize it was going to be this. It's a fairy tale, really. We kind of touched on it on our walk over here. I'm under the impression that you guys weren't so crazy about this movie.
I was hoping this would be Adam Sandler's dramatic comeback role after his endless, endless number of poop, fart, and general sexual disgusting comedies, inverted commas.
Right.
I was thinking maybe this is more Punch Drunk Love, more of a, you know, Adam Sandler, great director, dramatic role. Yeah, no.
Not so much.
Wasn't it?
No.
I felt similarly. You know, when you think about from like Win-Win, Paul Giamatti's character, a nice guy who interacts with these interesting characters around him, I felt like it would be a similar sort of path. And there were some nice supporting roles, but this actually ended up being another bad Adam Sandler film.
See, the thing that's funny, though, is that I can't really lay this at the feet of Adam Sandler. That's the really strange thing. Like, this is actually, for me, the second film I've seen him in at TIFF, because I saw Men, Women, and Children as well. And both films have Sandler really, really toned down. He's not yelling. He's not really acting very manic. Maybe it's the beard. You know, like, he seems to be rocking a beard a little bit more. It's kind of evocative of when Robin Williams used to wear the beard. You knew he was in the dramatic part. And, like, for what they get Adam Sandler to do in this movie, like, I think he does as much as he possibly can. I gotta lay this one at the feet of the story. You know, it's a really dumb story.
I mean, it's so painfully like, let's get the metaphor, walk in another man's shoes, and then actually do it.
Yes.
For what felt like 3 hours, but in fact it was probably about 95 minutes.
It was exactly 90 minutes. Like, crazy, right? We're 2 hours from the start time and we walked over here, so it's not that long a movie, but you're right, it feels that, especially the second and third act, feel really, really long.
They just hammer home the message, hammer it home again and again and again, and so, I mean, the first 20 minutes I was kind of charmed by the film. I thought the whole thing of the Lower East neighborhood that still had the cobbler and the barber and the fact that he looked after his mom and he really took good care of her, like, I thought that was quite sweet. And, you know, the whole neighborhood wanting to be redeveloped and the girl wanting to leading that group that was against that, I thought that was quite nice.
Yeah.
But so that the setup was nice, and the initial when he discovered that the Stitcher had this ability, that was quite funny watching him, like, you know, play around with it. But after that, it just got stale for me.
Yeah, I was getting ready to enjoy this time in the cobbler shop with these interesting individuals coming in to get Adam Sandler's character to fix their shoes, and once the film expanded outside of that world, it got very muddled, and yeah, what's kind of spoiler part of it?
Yeah, like, see,
the story,
you know, it's yeah, like the whole crux, the actual what he does with this power, like where that's the thing. Like, I thought, kind of like you guys, I thought the beginning was really cool, and just the fact that what he can do and how he can do it, it's like, oh, that's neat. Now what? And then that was the thing. Right around the time I said now what is right around the time this movie just runs off the cliff,
yeah,
and gets really, really silly really quickly. Like, I mean, right up into, it's not really a spoiler, his mother passes away about halfway through this movie. And right up until then, everything seems to be going very normal and very genuine. And, like, you know, right up to the point of he's a kid who's not really done much with his life, even though he's working a very noble trade and there's not enough people doing what he's doing anymore. You can kind of see that he's disappointed with where he's at. And I was like, wow, this is sweet and this is touching, and his mother passes away and he's sitting Shiva and he doesn't know what to do with himself. And it's right around then that things just get really kooky. And I imagine that when this movie eventually comes out, it's that second half where we're going to see all the ads taken from, like all the commercials and all the trailers, they're going to be taken from that second part, which is really terrible, because I really wish that it's that second part that I almost want it just to be a short film,
mm-hmm, yep,
of the first half.
He has this really unique power, and then for a while he's using it for genuine reasons, and then starts to exploit it for revenge and other assorted things. And
well, it's funny because, you know, within those assorted things, at one point, you know, we're during the film festival, I know you guys don't, but obviously you've seen that I do. I take notes, like, through the course of the film. Yeah, oh yeah, and you just weren't today because you're like, I'll remember this.
I have notes that usually say,
what's going on? But I made a note saying, wait, what happened with this? And it's like in the middle of my page, and then they finally pay it off at the very end. I was like, oh, but...
It's not, a satisfying resolution to that being.
No, it's not. And the sad thing is that this movie's a fairy tale. And there's a big part of me that likes fairy tales, that likes modern fairy tales, right? It's one of the things I like about movies like Frozen, you know, and movies like Brave that are gearing them towards children. I'm like, you could have told a sweet story, but instead you get silly, but not so silly in a usual Adam Sandler way. You get dumb.
Yes, and there's some kind of violent imagery in there as well.
Oh, shit.
That kind of, you know, draws it away from family viewing. And, oh yeah, there's a few twists in this film that you see from a long way off.
Yeah.
I wrote on my first page of the notes, is this going to happen? And then by page 3 of my notes, it had happened. And I'd seen it, you know, a page, 2.5 pages ago,
right,
of notes. And I think, like what you said, it starts off so genuine and you really feel the...
Coconut and banana cake and a maple syrup.
Yes.
And here is yours. Do you need anything else at the moment?
I think we're good.
Perfect. Enjoy.
Thank you.
So
welcome to Breakfast on the Matinee Cast, folks.
So it starts off so genuine, and I really enjoyed the relationships and the setting, and I think that's why I was so disappointed to where it went, because it could have gone somewhere quite special.
Yeah.
It was a really interesting premise. And like you say, I don't think this was Sandler's fault. He actually gave as good a performance as he could have done with the material he had.
Yeah.
The fault really is with the writing.
I really want him to keep at this. Like, I hope that between these two parts that he's found a second gear and that stuff like Jack and Jill and, you know, those sorts of movies are behind us. Like, I want him to hook up with a good writer. Because every time he's given in something warm, and I'm thinking about movies like Spanglish and movies like Funny People, he has done his best, and it's the script or the direction that betrays him.
Exactly. That's right.
Even
like other McCarthy films, he's joined by a pretty decent cast. And Steve Buscemi, who's commonly in Adam Sandler films anyway.
And even he is really warm and genuine.
Yeah, exactly. He's great. Melanie Diaz was great as well, I think, especially early on.
Yeah.
I thought their scenes were really genuine together.
Yeah.
And it's even great to see Dustin Hoffman turn up at some point as well. But the issue with this film is certainly a very muddled and wayward second half, and the fact that there are no real surprises, and the wit of McCarthy's previous films is not apparent at all.
Again, like I hate to belabor the point, but I would be down for, watching an Andrew McCarthy, a McCarthy fairy tale. I really, really would, right? Because especially in something like The Station Agent, it's kind of just under the surface. Mm. But that's the thing, I want it just under the surface. Mm-hmm. I don't want it overtly hammered over my head in the final act. Mm. With a clever play on words that I was like, okay, I'm going to mark that one down, but I'm also going to hold you to account for that kind of dorky final line.
Yeah, that was, I wrote that down, underlined it, I'm like, oh god, that is everything which is wrong about this film.
Yeah.
It just lacks subtlety, really does, in that second half.
Right. But enough about The Cobbler, and not a moment too soon, I think a few people at home are saying. You guys, by my estimation, have been having a pretty good week, a pretty good first run at TIFF. What are some of the movies you guys have seen that have stood out for you this week?
Well, we've now seen 20-something, I think, and there's like three or four that have really, really stood out. It doesn't seem like a lot, but you obviously can't name them all here, but Nightcrawler, the new film, well, the film from Dan Gilroy, it's his directorial debut, I think, stars Jake Gyllenhaal.
Yeah.
And he... Sorry, I thought.
So Jake Gyllenhaal, basically, he's a bit of an outcast, a bit of a loser. He's clearly not quite right in the head, and he's looking for a way to make money. And he comes across Nightcrawlers, which are these videographers that listen in on police scanners and try and get to the scenes of crimes even before the cops, so they can record it and then they sell it to the TV news.
It's very Ouija-esque.
Yeah, it's very chilling, because you're watching it and you realize you're part of the problem. Like, how many times have you heard about a plane crash or a shooting, and you're like, you flick on the news, you're like, oh wow, and there's the video, and you're glued to it. And this is a story about this kind of really sick guy who becomes the guy who gets the video.
Okay. Which I'm still feverishly trying to get a ticket for today. It plays tonight at like 9 o'clock, and I was hoping to get tickets, but it's not looking good.
Definitely the highlight. It's just so chilling. Another one which Ryan and I actually saw together was Coming Home.
Yeah.
Which Ryan cried in. I'm going to tell everyone.
Yeah. I want to share this story. We got to the end of this movie, and we were talking about how charged it was and how emotional it was, and I was like, yeah, there's a scene. Like, I was like moved to tears in one scene, and Sam's like, yeah, I know. And I was like, thank you. Thank you very much for that. You know, like, no, not a tone of like consolation or anything in her voice. You know, basically, to paraphrase something you've been saying all week, if Ron Swanson could have answered, you know, I saw you crying, it would have sounded like exactly like that.
Well, Ron Swanson is my spirit animal, so I would take that as a big compliment. Yeah. Thank you, Ryan.
You're no problem. Has there been anything about the experience that's surprised you guys? Like, something you didn't expect, like the weeks leading in that you found when you got here?
Definitely the first half of the festival, like Tuesday and before, just the sheer, like, the lines that went for blocks and blocks, even if you're an hour early. we don't really have big lines at Sydney Film Fest, and even when we do, they're nothing like this. And a large part of that is because some of our venues have allocated seating, particularly the State Theatre, where the big films are held. So we book online our favourite seats and walk in 5 minutes before the film.
Okay.
That's not the case here. So when Ryan told us, make sure you leave at least an hour gap between your films, we were like,
you thought it was nuts.
What is this madness? How are we going to fit the films in? Ryan, I apologise, you were right.
Yes. No, often we're running between films, you know, leaving 10, 15 minutes, and you can fit in several films in a day. We have done the same thing here, but we've been starting at 9 and finishing at midnight, that kind of day. I think the sheer energy in the centre of the city as well has been surprising. They closed down King Street for the first sort of 5 or 6 days of the festival.
And, yeah.
You know, coming out of a film at 10 o'clock or even later at night, and it's hard to make your way through the street. There's just so many people and
carnival atmosphere.
It's been great. But
it's quieting down now because it's gotten colder, and I guess the big premieres have been done, but it's still. Another thing, which is totally a TIFF thing, is we might want to explain to people that haven't been to TIFF, is the pirate sounds.
Okay, so I will talk about this because this is something that has to die.
Such a TIFF thing.
So many, many years ago, when piracy was really becoming a problem, they started putting a little anti-piracy warning on the screen right before the movie began. And certain somewhat smart-ass audiences started responding to this anti-piracy ad by yelling out, "Arr!" back at the screen. This was at least 2006, maybe even two. Actually, no, this was 2007. 7 years ago, this thing started. Ever since then, and now it's not even as overt. Like, you really got to read that static shot to understand they want you to turn off your media because of anti-piracy. But still, it's become so ingrained with a certain amount of smartasses that they still yell back at this one thing, "Arr!" and they still think it's funny.
We had to ask someone, because the first few times it shows in the trailers before the film, and right before that piracy ad is an advertisement for an upcoming Stanley Kubrick exhibition. And so I thought, like, am I missing a Kubrick reference? Because everyone says "Arr!" right after it. And then I had to ask a friend, and he explained it to me, and I'm like, oh god, I've heard it in every film.
Yeah.
Even if it's just one lone person kind of "Arr!" With a question. It's still there.
I did get one without, so I was really, really happy about that. Has there been anything that's disappointed you about your trip?
I don't think so.
I mean, we tried.
Was there a record you were hoping to find that you didn't find?
Well, I'm still hunting for the soundtrack for Man with a Movie Camera, which I once saw.
Of course you are. Yeah, of course you are.
Somewhere, and every time I go to a record store, I look for that, and I have never been able to find it since. But, that's not really a disappointment. I think a couple of films that we've seen, today's one, or what is
Yeah,
one.
That's always the thing I like to tell people is, you know, like they see our Twitter feeds and they see our blog posts and they think, oh, isn't this wonderful? They're going and seeing awesome movies. They're not all gems, folks. Like, sometimes they're chosen just because of who's in them. This is one of those dimes. Mm-hmm. You know, TIFF saw a movie with Adam Sandler and Dustin Hoffman, and they just saw what the premiere could be, and they booked it. So they're not all pearls. That is, and unfortunately, sometimes you have to see that for yourself.
Yeah, I mean, there's always going to be some that you don't like. And, I mean, less of a disappointment though, because you don't. The disappointment would imply that you had high expectations. And there's nothing that I've really been excited for that's let me down. Everything that I've kind of thought would be, you know, at least halfway decent has been quite the opposite. There's been a few last-minute additions that I just slotted in because I had a spot. Like, Coming Home was one. Another one was Hungry Hearts, which won Adam Driver, and I forget the actress's name. They both won Best Actor and Actress at Venice.
Right.
I just slotted that in because I had a spot, and it was incredibly moving and a really, really good film. So, nothing really that I can say I was disappointed in. Bad films, some really long lines, got caught in a few thunderstorms, you know.
And how? Like, man, I gotta admit, like, for two people coming to Canada for the first time, let alone Toronto for the first time, I could not possibly have chosen a week where it was the weather was more all over the map, because we had, like, not quite Australia level, but certainly, like, high humidity the first few days. We had a torrential downpour on night two, your third night in town, fourth night in town. Today, it's brisk, like, you're both in coats. I'm still in just my shirt sleeves, but that's because, you know, I'm the crazy Canadian. I do apologize for that. But I think I told you, like, I wrote you guys an email saying, you know, in terms of how you dress, pack for anything, because it's all over the map, and it always is.
For the most part, it's been quite warm, the humidity level has certainly not been as high as, say, Australia.
No, thank the Lord.
But today's quite a chilly day, and probably the only really chilly day we've experienced, so the weather's been great, and having just come from a wet August in winter over there, it's been great too.
Yeah.
I think one thing that we both sort of feel is, like, how lovely everyone here has been. Everyone we've met online.
You guys have been adopted into this little community, something fierce. Like, they like you guys more than they like me. And rightfully so. Well, yeah, that's what you think. No. That was actually the one thing I was, like, really looking forward to, is every time, especially people who haven't been here yet, every time they come up, I always want to introduce them around and kind of see how the family gathers them in. Like, you know, you guys were hanging out, like, drinking with my brother the other night, you know, and you brought him booze.
It's true.
Yeah, no, that's always the thing that I like to see.
That's definitely nice. It's just, like, the non-blogging, just the Toronto people in general are really, really nice, and just, yeah, really welcoming, friendly, and the volunteers at the festival are amazing, and I think it's really lovely that they have a trailer before the film. One of them is thanking the volunteers, and every screening the whole cinema applauds.
Yeah.
That's something that doesn't happen in Sydney, and I think, I mean, they only really do that at the closing night when they're explicitly thanked by the director.
Right.
So I think that's a really, really lovely, respectful thing.
That's like the anti-R. Like, that's the one that I want to always see continue. Okay, well, one last thing I want to ask you guys before you go, because this was something that was coming up a lot before you guys showed up, is the one little hiccup to doing TIFF is it's not cheap. You know, even, like, I live here, and it's not cheap. I'm spending as much on this as I would spend on a trip to the Caribbean. But how does that wash for you guys? Because this whole, your tickets, your stay, your flight, this was a big chunk of change. You guys have been basically planning this for, like, 2 years. I think at least a year. At least a year, like, you guys were talking about this, maybe even longer. How does this sit for you? Like, is this money well spent? And, like, I'm not saying, I don't think this is something you guys are going to do every year or even every other year, but even if this was, like, the only time you did this, is this money well spent to you? Do you feel like you got your money's worth out of this, or do you feel ripped off?
No, definitely got our money's worth. I mean, through the flights over here are expensive, and the tickets are expensive in comparison to Australia.
Okay.
Festivals, but we got this great place, great apartment for a really good deal, and the cost of day-to-day life in Toronto is a lot cheaper than in Australia, so we've come in well under our budget.
Right.
We're both leaving the country with probably, like, 40% of the money we came with to spend, because the cost of, like, eating out and drinking and getting around is much cheaper than we expected.
Well, you said a movie for you guys, like, on a Friday night is $25.
If you're going to 3D film, or if you're going to go to,
like, a 3D, let's go top line. Yeah. A 3D IMAX film.
$36.
Jesus. Yeah. And, like, we complain here about $17. We complain about less than half that.
To be fair, the IMAX in Sydney is the biggest in the world.
Right, but still.
But
still.
Yeah, it's a special occasion sort of thing.
Okay. I guess if you were to go to something like Scotiabank 1 or 2, like our equivalent of that,
yep,
and you were to see 3D film in that cinema, it's about
25.
Still, that's still, yeah. It's still less than half that.
And the dollar in Canadian to Australian is one for one, pretty much.
Okay, so yeah, no, it's... Because that was my thought is, you know, the reality is that the price of everything only goes up, right? I started doing this back when, if you bought a flex pack of tickets, it worked out to about $12 to $14 a ticket, which at the time was just a little bit more than what you would pay for multiplex. The multiplex at the time was about $10. So, you know, $12 to $14, okay. And then it went up and up and up till now you're at a point where if you buy a pack, they're about $18 or $19 per. If you're buying them out of pocket, they're like $24. And a lot of people here have squawked. And people here have said, they specifically use the example, if you're somebody like Tom Clift, or if you're somebody like Andrew Robinson, thank you very much, or you're somebody like Andrew Robinson, are you going to spend the money to do this? And I guess that's been my thought, and just that I wanted confirmation is, well, yeah, you will. Because besides just coming to see the films, it's something that you're not going to do every year. It's certainly something you're not going to do every day. And it's something that's rewarding, I think.
I mean, for us, TIFF is, you know, a launching pad for some of the films that will be talked about most over the next 12 months. A lot of the big, I hate to use the word award or Oscar, but a lot of the films that will be talked about, those accolades, they're not going to come out in Australia until December through March. And then there will be a whole bunch even more that will play at, like, next year's Sydney Film Fest, which is June or later. And then will be another bunch that will never see the light of day. So for us, even like the experience, the holiday, the other film stuff is amazing, but as two film nutters, to get the chance to see this proper films now and be at a festival that's so respected, like, that is totally worth every second that we've spent.
And especially these venues as well.
I was just thinking about that. Like, you know, don't get me wrong, you guys live in a world-class city that I'm sure has world-class venues. You have a world-class film festival of your own. But if you're coming in from, not to knock it, because I've never been there, but if you're coming in from Perth, you don't have a Princess of Wales type theater or a Winter Garden type theater. You know, like, these are places where you don't see. Like, I know, again, not to name drop, like, but I know Andrew Robinson, he talks about when he comes up, like, his theaters at home are just abysmal. So when he comes up, this is how he, like, envisions it always being. So that's part of it, I think, especially if you're coming from somewhere else.
Definitely. I mean, apart from the State Theatre in Sydney, none of the other venues at the Sydney Film Festival weigh up to the venues here.
No, that's not completely fair. I mean, there are a lot of nice cinemas in Sydney, but they're not specifically used for the festival.
No. No, and again, to be clear, a lot of the venues that are being used for the festival here are not used year-round. Like, you're seeing them in a lot of the theaters, you're seeing them, like the Princess Wales and the Elgin and the Winter Garden, those have, like, stage shows. Lightbox and Scotiabank, that's a different story. But a lot of the theaters that we've been in don't normally have films. So, this is good, because I think this is something that needs to be reminded. Like, one, that the city has an abundance of wealth when it comes to movie going, really, and we take that for granted sometimes. And two, just to get this from the perspective of somebody who, you know, you guys had to save up for this, right? So,
I mean, in addition to the film is the events, like the Q&A event, the introduction. We see some directors and stars come to Sydney for the gala events, but it's been great here to see Foxcatcher and then see Bennett Miller and the cast come out and do a Q&A afterwards, or Dan Gilroy talk about Nightcrawler. That was an amazing Q&A.
Cool.
Al Pacino. I mean,
there's just a whole higher level of sort of star power here, and we didn't go watch any of the red carpets or go star hunting, but just kind of see them at the Q&As. That was enough, and it kind of it just makes it that a little bit more special, makes it into a bit more of an event. And that's, you know, when we go home, most of our non-film friends, they're not going to give a crap that we went all the way across the world to see movies, but they will care that I was sitting three rows away from the incredibly handsome and talented Mark Ruffalo. That is something that they will be impressed by.
Sure.
That I saw, you know, got the lights. They won't know what that is.
Yeah, that's, I get the same sort of treatment when I go back to the office. Like, Monday, they're not going to give a crap what I saw. They'll ask me who I saw. So, and I'm going to tell them I saw Sam and Andy. I'm going to say this on mic because I've said it a few times this week, but just one more time. I am, like, thrilled as hell that you guys could get here. I had images in my head of what you guys were like, and you have, like, exceeded them in every respect, which, you know, I didn't even think that was possible. You are a charming couple, and I wish you guys nothing but good things, you know, going forward. I hope to do it again in 2 years, but, you know, I will have to wait and see.
We will try our best to get...
Yeah, nice. Yeah. Look at how that's working out.
We've already been discussing it, actually.
Awesome. So, I love it.
For the future.
Thank you, Ryan. Tell people where they can find you online. We'll start with you, Andy.
You can follow me on Twitter. It's at Buckle22. And
where do you write?
The Film Emporium. So filmemporium.blogspot.com.
Cool. Sam.
And I'm at Sakura_59, and my website is anonlineuniverse.com.
Very nice. More TIFF coverage coming over the next day in a bit. I'm going to be seeing Wild. I'm going to be seeing a New Zealand movie. Speaking of Sam Akash, who is let us remind ourselves, she is a Kiwi, not an Aussie. You're welcome. And I've got lots of things still to come. So check out the matinee.ca. TIFF is still going on this weekend. Check out TIFF.net if you want to come down here and join us. You can follow me on Twitter @matinee_ca. But until next time, for Andy Buckle and Sam Akash, I'm Ryan McNeil. We'll see you at the matinee and at TIFF.